So I just feel a little warm and fuzzy that I'm somebody's a-hole.
Well, you're specifically Dan's a-hole. Mm. And to be an a-hole's a-hole makes you a huge a-hole.
To use his language, that's strong.
It is strong.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to the Lazy Muse Podcast. I'm Jimmy G.
I'm Eric Gratton.
OMG. Oh my God, Eric. Okay, we got business to talk about, but oh my God.
Okay. Yeah, I think that about covers it.
Right?
Yeah. We have little blood, little guts.
Oh my God.
A lot of Sturm und Drang, gnashing of teeth, wailing. Ugh. Falling down.
Let's get the business out of the way and then jump into this shit.
Yes. All right. So let's talk about the contest, Jimmy.
Let's talk about the contest. So we still have it running. We have two more weeks, and that's the Reebok Spartan Race.
Reebok, not Adidas.
That's right. If you go to iTunes, leave us a comment, of which we now have three.
Three?
Three comments. So.
Not including yours.
Not including mine.
All right. So three that we know two of the people, don't we?
We do.
Yeah. All right.
But still, 33% chance you could win.
Absolutely. It's the odds are good. Much more than if you're a Royals fan like myself. My odds are not good.
Right.
But the old Reebok contest on the Lazy Muse is still up in the air for one more week. Next week, pull ourselves a winner.
So, all you have to do is go to iTunes, leave us a comment, positive or negative. So far, they're all positive. So, if you come and bash us, there's a good chance you could win this because you're being different.
Yeah, you're going to knock out at least two of the positives because Jimmy, I think, enjoys the positive reinforcement. He has a big old smile, you know, all that stuff. He enjoys it. I want hate. I want you to come on there and tell me why you hate me. Could be personal, you know, publish it. Tell us why you hate what we're doing. All right.
So I just want to read one of these comments that was left for us.
Which one are you going to read?
I'm going to read one from Professor Dan Schultz.
Oh, I know that guy.
So he gives us 5 stars.
Oh.
And this is what the professor has to say. You know those guys you hang out with that have an opinion on everything and will back it up even if they know it's wrong?
He's talking about himself here.
You know those friends that are kind of a-holes, but they're our a-holes. So you love them anyway? That's these two. The podcast is a great diversion for an hour. Awesome in-depth reviews of Game of Thrones and other pop culture minutia with a nonsensical tangents thrown in that are always welcome.
Well, thank you, Dan.
So we're somebody's a-hole.
Yeah. For those who don't know Daniel Schultz, he is a professor of theater at Stevens College in Columbia, Mo. And he looks exactly like Nathan Adcock, pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. Mm. There you go.
So I just feel a little warm and fuzzy that I'm somebody's a-hole.
Well, you're specifically Dan's a-hole. Mm. And to be an a-hole's a-hole...
Yeah.
Makes you a huge a-hole.
To use his language, that's strong.
It is strong.
So, you could win this race right now, Dan, maybe in the running, because, you know, I'm his a-hole.
You are his a-hole. Now, what are we drinking, Jimmy?
Well, because of, you know, what happened, oh my God.
Oh my God.
on this episode.
Pain of anger.
We are drinking Noble Rot.
That's topical.
It is. And this is by Dogfish Head Brewery.
I like Dogfish Head.
I like the guy. And, you know, I did all the research on the beer. I forgot to look his name up. But he had a show for a little while.
Right.
About, I don't know how many episodes, called Brewmasters.
Right.
I loved it. He's a great guy from what I saw on the show. And so I picked up this beer because of the name. 9% ABV.
Alcohol by volume.
That's right. To use the jargon.
Sure. I think the jargon was ABV.
So, it's a Beer Advocate score of 87, which is very good.
That's pretty good.
The brothers who run the site give it a 90, which is outstanding. So, I mean, what would you give it? What's Well, let's talk about a Lazy News score here for this beer.
This is a scale of 1 to what?
Whatever. Let's decide now. 10. Or you want to do 100? Who cares? 10. Let's do 37.
1 to 37, which is a very good prime number. One of my favorite of the primes.
Mm.
I would say that out of 37, I would give this roughly 14.8.
Mm, he doesn't like it.
I don't. I respect it.
Right.
But it stepped on my foot this one time, and I
okay.
No, I just don't like the way it tastes.
It's and yeah.
It's a little sweet for me.
It is, and that's the style. It's
yes,
a, it's
no,
a Saison,
of course.
A farmhouse.
Am I supposed
ale?
To rate it based on how much I don't like the rest of those styles?
No, I think you rate it whatever you want.
All
it's
right.
just the reason it's fruity is because it's a Saison. That's one of the things that makes it a Saison. It's a characteristic of a Saison
well,
beer.
Well, for our next episode, I also brought a farmhouse ale.
Good.
Which
well,
I like a lot better than this.
Dump into that. So let's just.
Why
I wanna,
are you going to dump into my beer?
Well, I meant drink it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm in a poop kind of mood.
So,
I always think poop's funny.
As Eric, you know, had mentioned, it's fruity, and that's why he doesn't like it too much. Here's what the genre of this is on. Are how it's described.
Read to me Saison. What is on your screen.
Yes. It's a very complex style, and many are fruity in both flavor and aroma, and supposedly has earthy yeast tones. I can't say the yeast really popped.
I see no yeast tones in this.
And a mild to moderate tartness. It does
certainly
have a tartness.
There's nothing about this beer that I would call earthy.
Me either.
Yes.
Not even grassy, even though it's yellow.
Mm. Yeah. No, there's... To me, this is very similar to like a lambic in taste. To
I think
me.
It's like almost a cider. Mm-hmm. So it's recommended that you drink it out of a pint glass.
Which we are.
We're actually drinking it out of the poor man's pint glass, or also known as a tumbler. And that's the American pint glass, which is 16 ounces.
Right. We are not doing imperial pints in this.
That's right.
Up in this joint.
Which is called a Becker. That's 20 ounces.
It's yes.
The little indentation at the top.
Yeah.
And in Germany, they would call it... Oh, no, I'm sorry. The English is called a Nonic.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. The Becker is a German pint glass.
I can deal.
So, not the best beer. And I have to admit, I bought it only because it said Noble Rot.
Which is the best kind of rot.
And, you know, it just screamed... The Red Wedding.
What is the Red Wedding, Jimmy?
So let's segue right into Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Episode 9, The Reigns of Castamere. And, you know, of course, this is a song about the big Lannister thing that Cersei explained to us just a couple episodes ago.
Easily the most famous song in the Song of Ice and Fire series of books. And the Game of Thrones television series based on same.
And if you were ever wondering why they're hounding on this song, because they brought it up two or three different times.
Oh, I think we're into the we're approaching half a dozen at this point.
Right. So, I mean, they really nailed it. And they wanted you to know what this song was, what it meant. And they want the audience to know what it is as soon as they hear it.
And we'll get to this, but I think we'll talk more about this when we get to the end of the episode. So yep. let's leave it at that and go to a different section of the woods.
I think we need to talk do a little different this time.
Yeah.
Instead of going scene by scene and just real chronological, I want to go storyline, and I want to start with a Red Wedding.
Okay.
I just can't focus on anything else. I can't think about
anything else, and we're burying the lead. I mean, you know, it's but
it's buried. Oh my God. I can't. I'm busting at the seams.
Okay, go.
So this was directed by David Nutter.
Right.
He's done several other episodes. And yeah, he's done some other things. Terrible, The Arrow, which is just a it's a crap show.
No,
this
just
is,
Arrow, right?
Right, right. Arrow.
No, I'm like, sorry. Was The Arrow some movie I didn't see based on a Robert Louis Stevenson book?
So he's done that, the U.S. version of Shameless, 10 episodes of Entourage, and there's a little show. A little show I want to bring up for my wife's sake.
Okay, please.
Because she's the only one in this country
Oh.
who watched and enjoyed.
Yes.
Traveler.
I kind of enjoyed Traveler.
You guys got something to talk about.
I kind
about
of enjoyed Traveler.
Because my wife.
Everybody hated it.
Loved
it.
I
kind of enjoyed Traveler. I'm going to absolutely say yes.
And she still, every once in a while, out of the blue, will go, do you think they have a new episode of Traveler out?
And how do you respond?
I'd laugh.
But you stop yourself from saying, oh, God, I hope not.
And Nutter's also done ER, The West Wing, Nip Tuck, Band of Brothers, The X-Files, and three episodes of 21 Jump Street. I mean, this guy goes back.
Oh, he's, I can dig it.
Johnny Depp's early days, man.
Yeah, no, I had no idea it went back that far.
Okay, so, and of course we have DB and Benioff, our boys.
Yes, no, of course.
As the writers. So this episode is about betrayal. We have two storylines. There's more than two. There's about four storylines, but two of those storylines have betrayal at the heart of them. That, of course, the phrase betrayal in the Red Wedding, which we're about to jump into. And
yes,
we have John's betrayal of Ygritte when he steals away back to the Night's Watch. So the big moments, I think, from this. Sir, go ahead.
No, hit me. Are we going? All right, I'm confused about where we are.
I'm just saying those are two
of the
themes, and then we're going to jump in.
All right.
You know, like a recap of the whole show briefly, like big moments. Bran finally becoming a warg. John betraying Ygritte. Danny takes another city. Boom.
Dig it.
Now all we're right going to jump into the Red Wedding, and we'll get back to those at the
okay
end.
Okay, let's do it.
The Red Wedding.
Are we going to start with that scene itself, or are we going to start with the meeting with...
Let's give a little filler for the people who might not know exactly right everything that was leading up to this.
Sure.
And, you know, if you want to see a cool sort of depiction of this, just go to our show notes at thelazymuse.com and click on The Red Wedding. There's a really cool illustration by Matteo Bocci.
Oh.
Of the Red Wedding. It's also in DeviantArt, which has some really cool kind of off-center illustrations as well.
DeviantArt,
yes. This is a setup for this. The episode starts with Rob and Caitlin kind of making up.
Yeah, in their way, yes.
Right. I mean, and I think it's really... It's just to put salt on the wound. It's like
I'm still going to prefer to say Catalan because that's how I pronounced okay it when I read the book.
I won't get in your way.
So every time you say Caitlin, I'm just going to go Catalan.
Catalan, and I think this just sets it up for even more a pain.
Well, and can I really briefly?
Yes.
Do you know why I never see it spelled like that and say Caitlin?
Why?
Because if it's going to be pronounced the way our name Caitlin is pronounced, then fucking spell it that way.
It's archaic.
But it's not. I'm just like,
it's
you know,
make-believe
spell
archaic
it Caitlin, or however the little girls
right
spell it these days. But if you're going to spell it Caitlyn, pronounce it some other way. You know, it's
why can't
similar
it be Caitlin that way?
Because you're just doing it to make it look cool, which is why a lot of, which is the start of all bad art, is to do it to make it look cool.
It's kind of a fantasy thing, though. You make the name look cool.
There's a difference between taking the H out of a Thomas.
Rhaegar and, with an RH.
Yeah, but Rhaegar's not a normal name. It's like Frank, Franck. No,
right,
you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. All right, okay, back to Caitlin and
back to Caitlin. Kat. You know, the making an amends, and there's that nice moment of her it really showing her support and saying, you know, something to the effect of, you make them feel what it's like to lose something they love, you know, and he's like, yes my mom believes in me. She's supporting me. And it just, as soon as it happened, I was like, the first thing I thought of was Adrienne waking up out of her slumber and saying, you win. You win, Rocky.
Oh.
And then he starts running, and you hear the music, and he is going to knock Carl Weathers out.
Yeah, he is. Ding, ding.
Ding, ding. and I'm sure they didn't want us to think of that, but popped in.
Everyone always wants us to think of that.
Of Carl Weathers.
Yes.
So let's talk about Guest Right.
Yeah, guest write is a very important thing in the Song of Ice and Fire, and right. And in as important a degree throughout the fantasy novel universe.
Mm-hmm.
The whole breaking of bread with your enemies, taking a drink under their roof, any number of ways you go about it. If
right.
you have been granted guest write, your person is inviolate.
Mm.
You cannot be attacked, betrayed, harmed in any conscious way while
smart.
You have claimed the guest right.
Right, exactly. And this is a, you know, this isn't something even the fantasy writers made up. It was a real thing.
Right.
In medieval Europe, the laws of hospitality said once you're invited in, just as Eric said, you are inviolate.
Yes.
In the Game of Thrones.
Yes.
So, and that was with the whole scene with the bread and the salt that they passed around. And yesterday I was on the playground and talking to another dad.
Yes, he wasn't there by himself. He took his daughter
kids.
To the playground.
The kids are playing around. And I asked the guy, I was like, so did you get what that meant? Like, when you saw them passing the bread around, did you know what that meant? And he's like, yeah, you know, I didn't.
Right.
They were eating bread. So... it wasn't.
Which, speaking as a baker, that's enough.
Right.
Just people eating bread is enough to excite
bread.
Me.
It's interesting. Yeah. Eric's like, is that a brioche?
That was clearly
eating?
Not a brioche.
Okay.
That was some sort of German rustic thing.
Wow.
Come on. There was no sweetness to that bread. It was a wonderful, soft, salty bread.
They're protected. And that's the reason why I was there. They were showing you that these guys were protected because it feeds to the betrayal that's about to happen.
Yes. Or is it? Yes, it is. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this happened.
I thought the tension that they started with immediately with Walder Frey just dressing down his king and totally disrespecting his queen.
Well, no, very much. But he's always been like that. You know, that's the role he gets cast in. You know, whether it's Hot Fuzz as the weird old man with the shotgun,
David Bradley you're talking
right.
about.
Or
right.
whether it's as Filch.
Filch.
And on a completely separate note, I don't watch the show on the Sunday. I watch it Monday when Linda's gone to work because...
Incest boobies.
She's not a big fan of the show. Though she did like the first episode, she just loves mocking me because every time she comes through, there's incest or boobies on screen.
As well
as
she should.
There is. Yes. But there's someone I follow on Twitter who I think is kind of brilliant, and her name's Lindy West, and she's a stand-up comic and writer who lives here in Seattle. And she, I think, summed up what a ton of people were thinking when the Red Wedding happened in a tweet that just said, "Fuck you, Filch." All caps, couple exclamation points.
Right?
She's a great follow. Follow her at the Lindy West.
Yes, I will. That is hysterical.
On Twitter.
That is hysterical.
So he's a good actor and perfect casting for this character.
Yeah.
Both because of the kind of associations we already have from the Harry Potter movies of who this guy is. Because that's who he is. If Filch had been given a lordship, he would be this dude.
He would be that guy, right?
But he's also a really fun actor, and they write him well.
There's some couple of really good things that they added to the show.
Yes.
And I don't mean they invented it, but because it's a camera, they can show you things that, you know, Martin just probably didn't even want to write. And one of the
and the thing is, when you write a camera change, you know, camera one, camera two, when you write that, you have to say, and if you turned and looked at the face of Caitlin, Catelyn Stark, you would have seen this. No, instead, it's, you know, they say what people are saying and then how people react.
Right.
You can't see how someone is reacting in a book at the same time someone else is talking.
Right.
Which is great.
So the one moment that really stood out for me before the Red Wedding starts is during the wedding of Edmure. And after, you know...
Which has been made to happen as a way of placating the phrase.
Right. So Edmure is now marrying a daughter that the king was supposed to marry, Rob.
Right.
So Edmure's taking his place. And, you know, Walder Frey is known for having a weak chin. All the Freys kind of have weak chins. And they're supposed to be ugly people. So Edmure, of course, isn't very excited about that. And then she Roslyn lifts up her veil, and she's a very attractive woman.
Yeah.
And there's this brilliant moment where Walder looks over at Rob, and he gives him that knowing, like, yeah, I was just fucking with you.
Right.
I wasn't going to give you an ugly wife or anybody else. I know that would be shitty. And that was absolutely brilliant on the part of the writers, whoever set that up.
You mean the cut between Walder and Rob? Because in the book, she's attractive too.
Right, yeah. That's whatever. I don't care about her being attractive. It's Walder's
reaction. But Edmure does, which is important.
Right. It's important to him, but I mean, just that they, because it makes everything kind of okay. It's like, I was fucking with you because you really dissed me and I wanted to get a dig on you, but it's okay.
Yes.
Because he was almost smiling. He was like, yeah.
Yeah, as much as that crusty old face could possibly smile without breaking.
Right. And if you didn't know what was coming, you might think, it worked out okay.
Yes, and I want to talk about this for a second, because this was the first episode where I really wish I hadn't read the books first.
Mm.
Because of all the things that happen, there's maybe one other thing that has not happened yet in the series that is more surprising than the Red Wedding.
Mm.
Maybe one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in this book.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
And this one is surprising in a Ben-Hur majestical battle, oh my god, everything's happening at once kind of way. And the other thing that's a little more surprising to me happens in a very simple, matter-of-fact, turn your head and you'll miss it kind of way, which is one of the wonderful things about how George or Martin writes.
Thank you.
But what's great about this is how I would imagine I react to it on a second viewing if I hadn't already known what was going to happen. Do you know? Because I might think he's got something up his sleeve. But if I hadn't seen this before and hadn't listened to everybody saying, oh, this is going to be huge. This is going to be huge. You can't wait. Oh, my God. What's happening next? If I hadn't seen any of that and I watched this episode, it would have floored me.
Right.
And I'd want to watch it again.
And there's a whole Facebook and Twitter feed based on people who haven't read the book and saw that scene in their facial expressions as they watched what happened. That says it all.
That's the people in the room who had seen it that decided to take pictures.
I think they were set up. It was like, listen, you haven't seen it. Watch it on your laptop or whatever so that we can get snapshots of you doing it, or maybe it was friends
something like
or something.
That because,
but
you know, I'm inherently untrusting of feeds like that. You know, you just happened to have that shit going,
right? Your okay, but anyway,
but
so
no, I understand.
It for me, I thought it was a really nice addition, and one of those things where seeing it live gives you the ability to do things that you can't do in the book. So let's talk a little bit about, sort of the history here. And by that, I mean what happens in the book and, a little backstory. So in the book, Rob, of course, is not married to Talisa. The name is Jane Westerling.
Yes.
And she's
again,
actually
J-E-Y. N-E.
Which I think, of course, is Jane. It's just an archaic...
No, I agree, but it's...
An artificial, archaic...
Artificial is the important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because most of the names that are used today that were used 100, 200, 500, 800 years ago are spelled exactly the way they were spelled then.
That's not true. There's a great podcast you should listen to about the development of the English language where he actually goes through and does the Lord's Prayer in...
Oh, no. I'm talking names. I'm not talking about other little things.
It's all the same archaic spellings, though. Things that... Not typeface, just the way they spell things, and it's the reason why the English language is so hard to explain how words are spelled. And I go through this with my six-year-old.
No, I understand
trying to say,
that.
Well,
but
you
Roman,
know...
the names we're talking about are Roman names. They're German names. We're not talking about Tim or Bastion, you know, we're talking John, and we're talking about any number of names that have been around long before the English language.
I'm about to fall asleep.
All right, moving on.
So,
well, and you should.
Jane.
J-E-Y-N-E.
J-E-Y-N-E.
George
R-R. R-R Martin.
How would he spell George if he had a character named George?
Oh.
J-E.
Well, he spells Joff with a J. J-E-O-F-F, which we would spell
no,
with
J-O. A G. F-F-R-E-Y. That's how I would pronounce Joffrey and spell
right,
it, too.
Right, but doesn't it, in the book, isn't it J-O-E?
No.
He has it, oh, right, he has it J-O-F-F-R. Yeah. Right. Okay, anyways, Jane Westerling is the bride to Robb Stark in the books.
Yes.
She's not at the wedding. She stays behind at River Run, where also the Blackfish is.
Right.
And her mother is Sybil Spicer. She's actually Westerling now, but she's a Spicer. Her uncle is Rolf Spicer. These two people are actually complicit in the Red Wedding.
Yes.
So Jane's mother
this
and uncle
is a coming.
No, it's going to happen. So, you know, another bad choice by a Stark here.
Yeah.
He marries a girl who's maybe she's great. She's a great gal. Who cares? But her family are a bunch of double-dealing douchebags.
Yes.
So the thing that happens here is the Spicers get a bunch of stuff. So Rolf Spicer, who's her uncle, for his being complicit in this, gets to be the Lord of Castamere.
Yes.
The, you know... who the very thing that the song, The Reigns of Castamere, was based on, because
right.
Lord Rhaen was the lord who Tywin Lannister utterly destroyed.
Yes.
And something else happens that elevates the phrase, but we won't talk about that because they may be bringing that up in future episodes.
Well, I want to talk for a second about the whole Gary and Lannister thing.
Yes, bring it up, please.
Because... And I don't know George R.R. myself, but I can only assume...
Is this a name thing?
Yeah. I can only assume that Gerion, G-E-R-I-O-N, is some sort of a subtle nod to Gerion, G-A-R-I-O-N, who's the young boy protagonist of one of the most famous fantasy series of the last 40 years. So
it could be.
I can only assume that is the case. So anyway, dorks, tell me if I'm right or wrong about that, but I'm betting that that's a nod to David Eddings. Anyway, can
right.
we continue?
Yes.
Why
so,
do you keep taking us aside on these rain bullshit things?
Right. Well, I mean, and I guess unless you read the books or you care about this, the history, it might not matter to you. I love it. And one of the big things here is that later on we see we actually see Sybil at River Run. She's with Jaime after he wins River Run away from the Tullys, and he's with Sybil, this lady who helped betray. And she tells him, you know, oh yeah, I helped your father do this. I helped betray the king.
Right.
And
this is a spoiler we're in the middle of, by the way.
Well, maybe because yeah. these people aren't in the book, so
right.
aren't in the series. So
yet.
We don't have. I mean, well, they would have had to be there
well, but
for the
now
Red
you've
Wedding.
Said that Jaime takes back River Run.
Oh,
which
right,
means
sorry.
Everybody knows that Jaime goes somewhere and gets some shit back and blah,
River
blah, blah.
Run. Right.
All
sorry.
Right, so everybody, rewind a few minutes and then skip right. this part.
We'll put in a little tag.
No, we won't.
Alerts.
No, that's not how
anyways,
we roll.
Anyways, Jaime is not impressed with this lady.
No.
She thinks it's going to win some points because he's a Lannister, and he says, basically, he's like, I'm disgusted by you. Don't come near me while we're here together or I'll kill you. Because it's sort of, you know, another step in his redemption phase because he wouldn't want to have any part of what happened there.
Well, no, and it's something he's probably been dealing with his whole life. Everybody who's a turncoat jackass bastard has assumed that they would get in his good graces by telling him that because they all assume that he's a turncoat jackass bastard. And we
right.
know
he's not. So, but this is another sort of knock against, I mean, the Lannisters already have a Kingslayer in
right.
the family. And now they are complicit in the guest right, the violation of guest right, because
right.
they're a part of this.
Much like breaking the Geneva Convention hasn't served us particularly well in recent years.
Ooh.
Moving on.
All right. So, you know, it's in the books, this happens about midway, two-thirds through.
Yes.
And it's a really big deal because it's a George R.R. Martin thing where he takes what's expected and he twists it. He surprises you with structure. And it's a pretty big departure from structure that something this monumental happens midway or even a quarter.
Right. You know. How are you going to top that for the end of the book?
Right.
And this is what I talk about. I mentioned this a couple days ago. And it's why I think the books are so readable and why he's such a terrific writer. You don't get the hint that this is where he wants the story to go. Mm. You get the hint that he wants the story to go the way you want the story to go. And then something happens beyond his control and the story goes this other direction.
Right, right.
So then it takes on its own new narrative and you start to become invested emotionally into where the story wants to go now. And you're like, yeah, so now this is where the story's going.
Right.
And he wants it to go there too. So there are no hints that something else big is about to happen. And sometimes there are hints that something big is about to happen and it doesn't ever happen.
Right.
I mean, it's a fun ride to read these books.
Yeah, and he gives you, I mean, this is, he has to know how, I think he writes intentionally on how geeked out people are going to get.
Oh, sure.
You know,
because
there's the whole, and they don't show this in the series, but when Dany, Daenerys Targaryen, went into the House of the Undying last season, in the book, when she goes in there, there's a lot of exposition. So she goes into different rooms, and she has these visions. And Rhaegar Targaryen, her older brother, shows up, and she sees him with a mysterious woman. And she sees him doing things that just people like us, like there's, you know, years worth of speculation.
Yeah,
we've been
parsing every moment of that.
What does
kind
it
of
mean?
Stuff. Like, oh,
you know?
it's both a vision into the past and a prophecy into the future.
Right, right, right. It's that geeky.
Yeah.
So that's what the guy brings us. So with the wedding, the way it was filmed in the books. This scene is a Caitlin slash Catelyn, or Catelyn, however you want to say it. It's from her point of view.
Yes.
And in the show, I felt like they kind of brought that in because we had a lot of nice shots that were from her perspective. So we got to see a lot of this from a mother's perspective. And that was very powerful because the biggest loss here is the loss of a parent and their kid. We have Talisa, you know, being stabbed in the stomach. So she's losing her baby. And, you know, the first thing she's thinking when she's stabbed, I'm sure, is my baby.
Yes.
Not I'm being stabbed. And then, you know, Caitlin seeing another kid die. You know, as far as she knows, almost all of her kids are dead.
Yes.
So taking it from her point of view makes it that much more powerful. So I thought it was a nice tie-in to the book.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I have nothing more to add on that. I mean, I could add things, but I got nothing.
Okay. So we have, you know, we'll get into the gritty stuff here. I'm kind of jumping around to the big moments. Just because this was so hard. Like, I watched it. I knew what was happening. It was a punch to the gut. And I had to force myself to watch this again the next day when I was doing the show notes. But at the very end, you know, where Roose Bolton stabs King Robb Stark.
Yes.
And he says, the Lannisters send their regards. You know, this is different than in the book where he says,
I can't remember what the line is.
Jamie sends his regards. And this is a direct tie-in back to the Bear and the Maidenfair episode.
Right.
Where Jamie says, send the Lannisters my regards. Send the Starks my regards. Not knowing what was going to happen. He's just, you know, being kind of a smart-ass self. And I totally get why they changed it. Because they want, you know, they're trying to push Jamie toward this road of redemption.
Heroic thing.
Right. And if they say Jamie sends his regards, he's then implicated.
Right. But he's not, because he doesn't know this is happening. And we know that he doesn't know this is happening. Well, or we will.
Right.
You know, I think it would have been nice to say Jamie knows his sends his regards, because then later on, as other things happen and people remember that,
right,
it gives even more of a reason for them to personally hate Jaime Lannister, which is part of what's important about the conflict between the two families, is that they keep this personal. You know, at some point, they're not going to be able to just keep it on Tywin, because maybe
it's like a British something blood happens feud here,
to
him, huh?
Right? It needs to. It needs to be this person who's a Stark against this person who is a Lannister. It can't just be Starks versus Lannisters.
Well, yeah,
that's part of it. But when he says Jaime sends his regards, it's a double meaning. You know, and it's a wonderful double meaning in that Jaime did. He sent his regards.
Right. Literally, you know? He said that.
I mean.
And he said it to Roose Bolton.
Yeah, I think that it lost something by changing that.
Oh, okay. I didn't think it lost it.
In a storytelling way.
But I see where you're going. And it would have been nice for the audience who doesn't know what happens to go, oh, now he's a douchebag. I hate him again.
Right.
Then to find out, oh, he's not a douchebag. I don't hate him as much.
Right.
Maybe. So, yeah, I mean, I get your point.
Thank you. Absolutely. Well, and my point is correct.
Yes.
All right.
It is. so the very last shot.
Yes.
I don't know if this could have been done any better than it was. I mean,
well,
what did you
think? I'll tell you after you describe it.
So what I loved about it was, you know, Caitlin, remind me of her name, the
Catelyn.
Actress. I mean, she... something fairly, right? Her pleading for Rob is brilliant. The hoarseness of her voice,
Michelle Fairley.
That, you know, she's desperate to save her son. When she sees that's hopeless and he's dying in front of her, and she cuts the throat of Walder's wife, whom he doesn't care. Then there's just dead silence. And then one of the Freys come up and cut her throat.
Yes.
And she just falls out of camera, out of screen, and it's dead silence. And the camera just lingers there and is focused on nothing.
Right.
And it just, I felt like there's nothing left. Like hope was gone. It was the Starks are done. It's over. There's nothing to see. Nothing to hear, and so there's nothing to look at. There's no sound, and it cuts to the credits with no sound, and it's just words. And it just really left me with that feeling.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of silence in film. I'm a big fan of silence in most things. I think it's an effective storytelling device that is incredibly overlooked and underutilized. In many areas, those of us who are Royals fans, I'm going to do this for a second. We lost a couple of legends in the last couple of years with the demise of Paul Splittorff and the recent demise of Fred White, who is one of the major Royals broadcasters in history. And after his death, they did a half inning of complete silence during a television broadcast, and there was just baseball, and you didn't hear anybody talking.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. And even thinking about that.
It was incredible, and as much as I love it as a tribute, I wish they'd just do that. I wish all I heard was the bat, the umpire, and the crowd. No, it would. It would be amazing. Not as powerful, but I wouldn't have to put up with Rex Huddler
for that moment.
Ryan Fever. But what I find most useful about something like this is. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be us thinking about what we think about what might happen next.
Right.
Not music giving us an idea of what we're supposed to think about what happens next.
Theme
which
song
is the big
stuff.
Problem with so much of
and sometimes
television.
It's cool because, like, you know, when at the end of – I forget the episode title, but when Jaime loses his hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, he screams and then it cuts to the punk version of Bear in the Maiden Fair.
Right.
I thought, awesome.
Yeah.
It kind of played.
I'm not at all saying that you should never
use
sound
and I know you're not,
music.
But, it can work, but like you were alluding to, it can get in the way when it's to tell me how to feel.
Yeah. No, definitely.
And this just let me feel terrible for longer.
I want to do one thing real quick and talk about a spoiler. And this is a real spoiler. So
this is a spoiler. Alert.
Take cover. A spoiler. Michelle Fairley has been hired to be on a different show next year. So here's what I ask you.
Mm. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. She's going to be on Suits. Now, they say recurring.
Oh, that means it's only a...
Well, no, not necessarily. But I'm saying, do they take a year off and come back in the next year with Lady Stoneheart? Or...
No. I think they'll do...
She'll only be in a couple episodes, probably.
She'll only be... Because it's not a big character anyway.
Well, but we don't know what they're doing.
We only see it as an epilogue, right?
No,
I'm reaching back and I don't know. So please comment if I'm
wrong. I don't remember
wrong.
Either. I thought we've seen her more than once.
And you might. I'm talking about in Storm of Swords. I think she's
in the
epilogue.
Very episode, very end of next season, you're expecting to see her once.
Right.
And then we'll move on to what happens after that.
Right,
okay.
Right.
I'm so just saying, the first thing I saw when it says she's got her own TV show coming,
it's
I'm
very
like, no!
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
because I know what happened with Strong Belwas.
What happened?
I remember. Never forget, Jimmy. I know what happened with Strong Belwas.
As I mentioned before, I saw George
Art
Martin at Seattle's Town Hall. He came in to talk about the books. Somebody asked, what house would you be in? What do you without pause, he said, the Starks. I'm a Stark guy. They're my favorite character.
Team Stark.
And my question to you,
hashtag Team
Georgie
Stark.
Boy, is if you like the Starks so much, why do you shove shit down their throat every time you get the chance?
You only hurt the ones you want to love, but don't actually exist except in your own mind.
I mean, what – and I don't – I never doubt this guy. I mean, I understand why people are pissed at him about how long it takes for books to come out.
Oh, I'm not. I don't understand that at all. I mean, yeah.
Well, I just wish I would have come to him when he was dead and I could have just read them all. But
right, but I don't demand from my favorite film directors that they make a movie that's not once every 10 years. People demand that of M. Night Shyamalan. And his movies are terrible.
Yeah, he sucks.
You know, so...
Let me go back.
Maybe if he hadn't done a movie since Sixth Sense for 15 years, the next movie might have been pretty good.
Maybe better. Let's go back. I like his stuff so much. I wish...
R.R. you mean.
R.R. Martin, right. I wish I could be constantly reading something.
Yeah,
that's
no,
all.
I understand that.
That's all.
Well, then I would recommend Raymond Feist... And I would recommend S.M. Sterling.
Well,
and
I'm going to read Wheel of Time.
Margaret Weiss.
I'm going to read.
And I would recommend Tessa Gratton, my amazing cousin.
And that's going to be on my list just because it's sort of in the family.
It is.
And so I definitely want to read that. But my point is, why I originally brought it up is I don't doubt him. I mean, this guy is a brilliant writer. I never try
to. He's very good.
Even though I look at it and go, oh, could this mean something? I don't ever think I have it or. Think I can do better.
Right.
Like,
no, you're
I'm
going to
imagine something better than what he already has.
You're never ahead of him. And when you think you are, he smacks you down a little
bit. So
with the Red Wedding.
I just wonder, like, he said the Starks' revenge will be bittersweet.
Right.
He's been quoted as saying that. So he already knows.
That there will be some revenge.
The Starks will get back, but it's bittersweet, which means... It's not going to be like they just ride to the top and they're, it's some more loss is coming.
Well, and that's what I was thinking about the other day, too, is his more than just about anybody I can think of in my experience with the fantasy world. And I love reading fantasy novels. And please, with your torrent of... solicited and unsolicited emails to thevarylazymusic@gmail.com.
Right.
Give me some recommendations on what I should be reading, especially modern stuff. But one of the things that I love about The Song of Ice and Fire is that it's, you take away the freaking magic and you take away the dragons and you take away all the crap that doesn't have any meaning in real life. Now, this is a book about how people really are. And I fucking love that.
In politics, like how
you're
playing the game.
And family and love. And I mean, this is how people treat each other. And it's dark and awful, except when it's not. And then it's amazing.
Right. And,
you know,
So, and now that you brought that up, it's a perfect segue.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Because the Red Wedding is real. This isn't just something he totally made up. This is based
on
two events that actually happened.
Well, and George R.R. is a historian. I mean, right. The dude.
Well, he appreciates history.
Amateur.
Yes. A little Dan Carlin reference. Yes. He has people who do a lot of his research for him.
Yes.
That he is thanks all the time.
Yes.
You know,
vocally, preferences. Vociferously.
I have the link here, but the big one is a Scottish betrayal from the Campbells.
Okay.
And what is it called again? It's the Glencoe, maybe?
I don't know.
My computer is acting up here, moving all about so I can't get to where I want.
Dan, there's dead air. I called you Dan because we were talking about Dan Schultz.
It is...
There's dead air. Fill it.
Glencoe Massacre.
All right.
So,
it sounds like a company that does robocalls.
It's not.
Okay. I'm just telling you, that's what it sounds like.
The Clan MacDonald stayed with the Campbell clan overnight, and the laws of hospitality supposedly applied. But the Campbells arose and started butchering every MacDonald they could get their hands on.
Right.
So this is such a big deal that supposedly... There's places around this area in Glencoe, Scotland, where they still have a sign to say no Campbells allowed. And, you know, they have this Scottish fair in America where the Campbells literally are not allowed to have a tent. I mean, this was such a big thing that
Do you think the soup changes its name when they export it to Scotland then? Do you think McDonald's right. should start selling Campbell Scoop? Because I kind of think that would be awesome.
I don't know. But to read the full article, you can go to the link in our show notes that says The Real Red Wedding. Real Red Wedding. Wow, that right. ABV 9%.
9% by volume.
Catching up with me. And there's a link that will take you right to the EW.com
By the way,
article.
Go right to episode 15 after this, and you'll see what happens when we drink another one.
Yikes! So, listen, here's another bit of a spoiler.
Yes.
And it may be a pretty quick spoiler, because this could happen next week. A bit of the aftermath here of the Red Wedding.
All right, spoiler alert number two.
Spoiler alert!
By the way, I hope you came back at some point from number one. If right. not, just keep going.
The phrase decapitate Rob, decapitate Grey Wyn, his dire wolf, and so
oh, don't do it. I don't want to see that.
Head onto his body.
I don't want to see that one.
But the big thing is
that's a very effective piece of writing that I in no way want to see on the small screen.
What I'm pretty sure you will see is some version of Catelyn Stark's naked body dumped into the river. And the reason yes. you see that is not so that we can see another naked woman. It's because, as we saw a few episodes ago, the Tullys have a tradition of releasing their people into the river. Because
right.
that is the lifeblood of their family.
I don't think anybody thinks that when you see a dead naked body that anybody's trying to make that a sexual thing,
right.
Jimmy. I don't think anybody goes there. And if they do, they should, you know, die by fire.
Not listen to our podcast. And definitely don't comment.
Yes. moving on.
Yeah, so that, I mean, this is, if you read the book, there are several moments where you thought, you know, I can't wait to see this. And we've hit two. That's Dany taking the Unsullied away, taking them into her possession.
Right.
And then the Red Wedding is probably the biggest of those moments where, you know, how are they going to do this? And you know, what is it going to be like when it's actually dramatized? And I give it a 10 out of 10. I thought they did as well as they could have with what they had to do.
No, I can see that. I have trouble with 10s. I'll give it an 8. I feel very happy with it. One moment that I really loved is, you know, Caitlin, is sitting next to Roose Bolton.
Oh, right.
At the table.
Yes.
And I can't remember at all if this is talked about in the books, but it's a very effective moment where he says something sort of innocuous, and she, because she's the smartest person in the books, I think no one would really argue with me there. She has less power than some of the others because no one thinks of her as being as smart as she is. Because it's a very misogynistic world.
I never thought of
her
being smart either.
But I think Catelyn's incredibly smart.
Man, I think she was dumb.
Aware of the politics in a way that nobody outside of Tywin Lannister is, except maybe Dane Diana
Rigg. What in the books made you think that?
Because she always gives good advice to her people who always ignore it, and then they die. Mm. You know, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She is by far the most able of the Tullys, and even the Blackfish respects what she has to say. Her brother is not particularly intelligent.
Well, he's adult.
But she is the brains of Ned Stark. Ned's the heart. She's the brains. You know, it's all of these things, and she grows as a character right up until her throat gets cut. And it's much more painful to see her die than it is
and
to see Rob die.
I never liked her in the books.
Really? I can understand that. I mean, I to me, she's very much like the Protestant half of my family, in that what's inside is something you don't tend to see, and what's outside is cold. But what's inside is incredibly alive and vibrant and intelligent.
Right.
And, you know, to me, I recognize this character very much, and I kind of love her.
I didn't dig her just because I think of her feelings toward John and how she was so dismissive of him.
Of course,
and,
she's
she forced him into the
Night's Watch.
I've been
an asshole to nice people before.
Right, and it's not, you know, it's not because I didn't recognize something in her. It's just like there's other characters that I really loved, and then that made me dislike her because they're like, I don't get your vitriol toward this other person who...
Oh, I get it.
Did you no wrong?
No, I can't, it's not
like,
towards him.
Why is it not toward Ned Stark?
It is towards Ned Stark.
No, but she still loves that guy.
Yeah.
And she does not love Jon Snow.
Because everyone is at all times logical in everything that they do.
Oh, yes. Like I'm not being now.
Exactly.
I don't... You know, I didn't like her because of intellectual reasons.
Right. The thing is, I just disagree with you so much.
And
she was one of my favorite characters
on the show.
Yeah.
Way more than I liked the character in the books.
Well, I think that she, as an actress, is maybe the closest to the way I envisioned the character.
Agreed.
In the entire series.
Agreed.
Her and possibly Sean Bean as Eddard. And Tyrion. Sure.
Oh, yeah. And I thought Sean was... Yeah, he was...
I think Sean Bean is perfect at all times, and you should cast him as everyone. Yeah. But I'm a very big fan of Catelyn on the TV show, and I'm really sorry to see her go. But the moment that I'm talking about, and this is going back to like 10 minutes ago when I said she was sitting at the table next to Roose Bolton, is he says something innocuous... And she connects it to what she sees going on around her.
Right.
And the door shuts, and she hears the Reigns of Castamere.
Right.
And her reaction at that moment is really wonderful, but it's nowhere near as good as the reaction to when she reaches down and pulls up the sleeve of Roose Bolton's.
Yes, and sees a chainmail.
Yes, and sees the chainmail right
there.
And
she slaps him across the face.
And she knows exactly what's happened, and she goes crazy, and she becomes... You know,
mother protecting her cubs.
Yeah, it's an amazing moment, and it's the end of my second favorite actor on the show. So I'm just really hoping Dame Diana Rigg has a bigger presence from now on.
Gut wrenching, and you know, George R. Martin knew where he was going with that.
Of course,
he knew. He was like, I knew it was going to happen right away. It's like it was always the plan that those two characters would die when they died. And I couldn't see any other outcome for them.
Well, and more power to you, George R. R. for not telegraphing it at all.
Right. my goodness. So the rest of the show, there's some good stuff, but it's kind of, whatever. I mean, you know, we have the taking of Yunkai.
Yes, we do. Which, I want to talk about the fight for a second. The fight where they storm the gate and have six or seven guards that they take down.
Right, the three of them.
Is really a nice fight. It's fast, it's violent, it's quick.
Good.
It's in direct contrast to the fight between the wildlings and Jon Snow, which I think is terrible. And it's the first terrible fight I've seen in a while, but it's easily fixed if the first two moves aren't two broadswords clashing way above everybody's heads. The problem with
where
this,
are you striking?
And this is stupid. I'm going, you know, this is, I'm going to get
geek out
on
stage
on,
violence
in stage violence stuff. If you're swinging a huge broadsword at some unidentified point 4 feet above your opponent's head, and then that opponent blocks
them.
The crap, it is the most clearly unviolent act in the history of anything, and it's awful and boring.
It's so heavy. Why would you waste the
energy
going?
Swing it at the person's midsection and try and cut them in half. That's what you do. You try and break ribs and arms. And, you know, anyway, the rest of the fights in that sequence is fine. But, like, the first two big moves and the only two moves you see without a quick cut are just terrible.
I agree. I thought it was a
great
fight.
Sorry, I had to geek out there for a second.
You had
because
to.
It's important. Violence is important. And in a show like this where they actually show the results of violence and the consequences of violence, which is what's missing in a lot of entertainment,
and
it's even more important.
And money-wise, when you know that they have a couple, if not several, fight masters.
Really good fighters.
Of which there's only about 15.
Well, I mean, they're not using the SAFD fight master guys. They're, you know, they're using film stuntmen.
The guy I trained under there for a little while does all kinds of movies. Dale Gerard.
Yeah, but they're not doing this. They're using British guys for this.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're not going to be using American stage guys, you know.
So, you know, there's a little bit there with Dario who says to Jorah, you have a suspicious mind. From my experience, that means you're, you know, untrustworthy or whatever he says.
Right.
So here's another little hint about, you know, Jorah.
Well, we already know about
has
Jorah,
a checkered
though,
past.
You know.
And we know exactly what it is, but you're just, you know, waiting for the shit to hit the fan.
For Dany to find out what everybody else pretty much already knows.
Right.
And that's my question. Barristan knows.
Yeah. The episode a couple weeks ago.
So why hasn't
to
he told Dany?
Says he knows what's going on. And I don't know. Maybe he has his own.
Which I would buy more if we had the Whitebeard strong Belwas bit.
Right. And there's a moment there where Barristan seemed to be like, hey, don't do this alone. I'll go with you.
Yeah.
You need some help. And, you know, Jorah's like, no, we have to do this because if we're going to be blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
Just another setup. It was like, I'm being really loyal so that you can see that I'm not loyal.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, the only other big moment is, you know, they come back from their fight and they don't show the really big, you know, Chinese karate scene where they fight 70
people. Let's talk for a second. Karate is Japanese.
Oh, okay. Karate is Japanese. So kung fu?
Sure, that'll work.
Whatever.
No.
I'm talking about the out of sync
old
movies where the guy fights 100 people and wins.
Well, except there are some examples of some amazingly in sync old movies where that happens. If you haven't seen the Jose Ferrer version of
I have not.
Oh, you're killing me here. The version of what's his name? Long Nose.
Captain Hook?
No, the play.
Shylock.
Roxanne. Cyrano de Bergerac. If you haven't seen the, I think it's from the 40s, the Jose Ferrer version of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah.
The one, you know, Cyrano fights 200 guys.
Meisner actor.
You know, yeah.
He actually trained.
I know.
Taught at the
Oslo.
Theater
guy too. Married to whom?
I forget it.
Uta Hagen.
Oh, really?
Point. Yeah.
Wow, betrayal.
and then later to Rosemary Clooney. The fight scene where Cyrano fights the 200 guards that night.
Right. Right.
You know, is one of the best fights in film history. It's amazing, and there aren't quick cuts, and there's no special effects. It's just a really really good and acrobatic fight. So it can be done. Now,
it's
not going to
be
done by these guys.
It can be staged, of course.
Well, that's what I mean.
They cut away from it just because ridiculousness of it all.
But, you know, part of it is they don't fight that many guys because the slaves come from all over the city and kill them for them. You know, which they do talk about, the slaves.
Right. But obviously there's more because when they cut away from the first sight, they're not as bloody.
Right.
And they show up. It's like they've been through hell.
Well, they have a budget, Jimmy, but it's not unlimited.
Where's Dario?
Yeah, they have a budget, but it's not unlimited.
Is Dario okay? You know? And I asked the same guy at the playground. I was like, so what do you think about this Dario guy?
Dude, this playground guy's your go-to source.
Well, because he hasn't read the books.
Well, to all, you know.
Right. And he was like,
normal people.
You know, he's a pretty face, I guess. And, you know, so I explained to him what he should it be like. And he was like, oh, yeah, that'd be much more interesting.
Well, but what they wanted for the show is kind of...
A homogeny of intimidation.
Well, no, for this character, they wanted a moron that a young moron would fall in love with.
Right. You think it's too long to do hashtag homogeny of intimidation?
No.
Is that too much?
There is no such thing as a hashtag that's too long. You know, the Germans just got rid of their longest word. It's a hashtag now. You know, it's this exists. It's like 400 letters and,
yikes.
You know, it's two hashtags, I guess.
All right. We don't need to talk about Jilly and Sam. So what? I mean, the only thing about
we'll talk about them when it gets more important.
The only thing that may be a little spoiler-ish.
Yeah, hit me.
Is Sam brings up all this information about how to get into the Knights Fort.
Right. Which
in
won't
the
matter
books,
in
he's
a
given that
for
information by somebody else.
Yes.
So another
indication that... So are we assuming that's just not going to happen?
Maybe we don't see this guy for a while. We're going to see him because we met the character.
Yeah.
We've met that character.
You think?
Well, in the season one, we've met...
Right, but we don't know that that's who that is.
We don't know for sure.
I mean, we do, but we don't.
Who that is.
That has not been confirmed.
You're absolutely right. So, I mean...
So that was... How was that for a bullshit spoiler right there? That was a half... That was a half spoiler.
So, you know, and it... I don't know if people who watched it knew that... The place Jilly and Sam are headed to is the exact same place that Bran and John and all them were at in this particular episode. They were at the Knight's Fort. So that's where Sam and Jilly are now on their way.
Right.
And that's not a spoiler. It just might not have been clear that the Knight's Fort was the destination.
I didn't remember that.
Of both of them. So whatever else.
All right. Let's get on to Bran.
So Bran the Warg, man. I mean, this is the first time.
Right.
In the series,
right,
we've seen him really
consciously
become a warg.
Consciously do it.
Up until this point, it's
the warg,
all been dreams.
By the way, are the people who take over all the animals.
Right, like Orel.
You know you want to. You want to call him Orel. Call him Orel. That's
it's
fine.
It's easier for me.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure it is. and Michael Douglas.
I don't know what that means.
You should. Get on the computer every once in a while.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So... This is the first time he actually wargs out.
Yes.
And in the books, they reverse this in the show. So in the books, of course, Bran's a point of view character. So he's been doing this in every chapter, and he gets more and more intense to the point where he's not eating because he thinks he's full
because he ate as the wolf. His dreams, he's been eating as the wolf and all these
And it's
things.
Not a dream. He's just at night, he's slipping into the skin of the wolf. And he's literally...
Well, but at the beginning, he doesn't know he's doing that. You know?
As much as anything else,
he thinks they call it the wolf dream.
But, exactly.
Yeah. Which they also call it that in Wheel of Time. Thank you.
Bam!
Thank you, Jimmy.
So... He's already been through that, and by the time he does take over Hodor, it's kind of a perversion.
Hodor.
Yeah, it's a thing like, what did you do? That's not cool, man. You can't invade somebody's mind. And it is in the show, he jumps into Hodor first, and then he becomes a wolf, and then Jojen gets all boy crush on him about, wow, nobody's ever done that.
I mean, and what does Jojen know? Jojen's too old in the series, by the way. He's supposed to be...
Yeah, all of the kids are.
Yeah, they're all supposed to be like tykes.
Right.
It's the Ender's Game syndrome. You know,
we're
not going to actually abuse young kids, so we're going to abuse older kids.
Right, tweens. Not even tweens, like teenagers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I
bet the kid who plays Jojen's like 30.
Right. So it doesn't lose anything. I mean, who cares? We don't see it all happening, but it just... Why invade a person's mind before we get to see some... You know, direwolf action, which finally in this episode we got a fair amount.
Yes, we did. And, you know, between Grey Wind doing his thing, and
You mean like his thing as in dying?
Well, yeah, but first you see him going crazy before anybody else knows what's going on.
Right, right.
You know, Grey Wind knows what's going on. That's Rob's dog, by the way. You know, wolf, whatever.
And Rob obviously was at a warg. He couldn't sense anything.
Right.
He's just sitting around like, did you just stab my wife three times in the belly?
Well, and what hit me was didn't Bran get in both wolves?
It looked like he got in ghost too. Because what is it? The Grey Wind was kind of just, or Ghost was just kind of watching. He's like, what's
right? But something happened.
Right,
like, they cut from Bran's face to Ghost, moving his head around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
it definitely looked like he got in. And there should be three direwolves there. Ghost,
right.
Summer, and what's
Shaggy
Bran's?
Dog?
Shaggy Dog is Rickon's. So there should have been three dire wolves attacking. But anyway, so he finally wargs out.
By the way, Shaggy Dog is the best name for a dire wolf ever. That's just awesome.
And that's it, you know. And then the only we see the really quick departure of Rickon and Osha. Did we decide?
Yeah, we decided the Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
So they leave. And I kind of liked how she was like, okay, I'm out. No reason to sleep over.
Right.
No long goodbyes. We're done. See ya.
Latest.
We're going to the Umbers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think we're ever going to see those two characters again. and then, you know, the other storyline that I thought was the only real importance here was Jon. And this was the other betrayal. I mean, this is John. He cuts out on her. He gets on that horse, and he doesn't look back. He just rides away.
Yes.
And she, and you know, Ygritte helps him out in this episode when he doesn't want to kill the horse breeder, and he clanks the rock with his sword to give warning.
Right.
So that guy gets away, and she knocks her arrow, and from what we know of her, that, you know, she's dead aim. This guy's dead, and he says Ygritte, and she purposely misses. So she, maybe not. I mean, it doesn't say she didn't go, I purposely missed because I love you and I want to be on your side, but
she hit him.
I think. No, it hit the tree. The arrow hits the tree. He's not hit by an arrow at all. He gets away, the horse guy.
He got hit in the chest by an arrow.
No, at the end. She loses two arrows. At first, when he hits the rock, on the horse. She hits the tree, so he gets away cleanly. And at the end, when she's like, kill him, then she puts the arrow in him. But so she steps up for Jon. To like, hey, I'm on your side. I'm helping you out.
And then
here.
She doesn't fight Jon until he gets away, and then she gives him that death look.
And then he just like, you know, he disses her. I mean, he's straight up just like, see ya.
Well, yeah, he's got some troubles here. He is a torn man.
Yeah,
there's a kingdom at stake and whatnot. I understand what you're saying.
I mean, it's just high and dry,
this
man.
This is tough, man.
That's not my form of
this
loyalty.
This is not the easiest shit.
It's not my
loyalty. You'd rather be loyal as shit and then let the White Walkers in, wouldn't you?
To the death, man.
Yeah.
That's my woman.
I'm more to the pain.
That's my baby.
Yeah.
I get to be with her.
Okay.
So I thought, you know, two little acts of betrayal.
Yeah,
oh my
tiny,
God.
Nothing.
Oh.
All right, so we see what's happening there. So let's talk briefly about Arya and the old dog, shall we?
Yeah, Arya and the Hound. I mean, yeah. I like this. I like the interplay.
Oh, I think those two actors work really well together. Yeah, I agree.
And I
like the way they're writing Arya more and more.
And I think they're writing the Hound. I don't know. I'm going to pose this as a question.
Okay. Oh, yay. Do it. Make sure your inflection goes up at the end.
Wrestling Menelaus?
oh, God. Dorkiest two-word segue in the history of the Lazy Muse podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
In the books I got, you know, these two are together, the Hound and Arya. And I never got the sense of the Hound really searching for his own kind of redemption or being other than just kind of abusive towards Arya, not in a destructive way, because it's always from her point of view. So we see the Hound the way an angry little girl right. sees her. In the show, we don't see that at all. We get to see the Hound from the writer's
right.
point of view. And he's has a lot more to give than yeah. just that.
No, I'm conflicted on the Hound in the TV show.
Right, because which is kinda nice,
it
right?
is. I saw. Well, no, I mean, I'm conflicted on whether or not I like him, how he's being done.
Oh,
not
okay.
not
okay.
him as a character.
Right.
I always
okay.
like the character. I got no problem with the character.
Right.
I don't want to try and be friends with him, but you know,
right.
I like the character.
Right.
The way it is in the book for me, he's very smart, incredibly pragmatic, with his own weird kind of loyalty. Right. But
he's
pragmatism is the important
evil.
Thing. Yes. Oh, God. Oh, we're doing that. All right. Good
Hello.
Work. Good work. Good work. I've always considered myself neutral good as a human being. But, oh, wow.
Yep.
But what I would say is that in the series, he's a lot dumber than I expected him to be.
Dumb how?
I don't think he thinks deeply about anything. In the series, I think it's he sees man on ground, pull knife, kill man. Which I don't see. I think he speaks in the series. If they could, they'd have him speak like Mongo. You know, Mongo like candy, Mongo take girl, Mongo kill man with
right.
wagon.
All right, all right.
You know, that's the way it seems to me. I don't think the actor is doing that. I think the writers are doing that. The actor is making him much more. Multi-layered than I think the script is calling for, which is tough when you're covered in makeup, you know, covered in inch and a half thick makeup. That's tough
right,
to do.
For the burn and all that.
He's doing really well. I like the actor a lot, and I think he's well cast. I argue that how I saw Sandor Clegane
right.
was different than how he is. And like I say, I'm conflicted, not decisively against how they're doing it. There are times where I think it's the perfect way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I very much like this scene. I just think that he'd be better able to explain to this girl why he thinks the guy needs to be dead. He wouldn't do it in monosyllables the way he did.
Oh, okay. See, and that's, I'm on the other end, I guess, is that...
That's his brother.
Their wisdom and simplicity. And it's not that he's mono, you know, syllabic in his thoughts. It's.
I love that monosyllabic is such a long word.
<Dun-dun-dun>.
No, I do. I think it would make sense to see, oh, God, you're being so tub. It's
right,
like if tub
right.
meant monosyllabic, it would be onomatopoetic.
I had to write a play with onomatopoeia.
I know. I remember that.
But
the Dare Project.
I dig that he's very to the point. And I don't mean simple-minded. It's kind of a Zen thing. He's just... he's,
yeah, no, I can see that.
It's simplicity. It's,
I think
he's going
to
take care of this guy with the wagon for the same reason that Jamie wanted to take care of the other guy with the wagon with Brienne is you tie up your loose ends.
Sure.
Because there's stuff going on here. Everybody wants a piece of the action. They're going to take... whatever they can, this, you know, guy with his pigs, if he can get 5 gold pieces for killing
right.
us, maybe he will.
No, I agree with what you're saying in an intellectual way, and I agree that's what the actor is doing, and I agree that's what the director is doing. But
right.
I don't know that I agree that that's what the script is trying to do.
Okay. Well, yeah. The one thing
it
I would
what
say...
What I'm saying is the script can more effectively convey that than it is. The
okay.
actor cannot more convectively
right,
do it
right,
than he's
right,
doing
right.
it.
So...
did I say convectively? I think I did. I meant convincingly and effectively.
Thank you.
But convectively is poetic as shit.
Yes.
And I think I'm going to keep it as a word.
Do it.
It's my new descriptor.
We'll have a lazy muse lexicon.
Yes.
I love the girl playing Arya. I think she's doing
great. She's
great,
yeah.
I love Arya's maybe my favorite character.
You said
in
that.
The book.
I like her better when she leaves Westeros. Spoiler.
Right. But in the book, I feel like in the book she's tougher. And I'm not sure that she
that's
actually
again,
lives
I,
up to the toughness in
well,
the series.
And again, I don't think that's the actress's fault.
Right.
I think they're
Absolutely
doing
not.
Weird stuff with how they're writing the
Absolutely
character.
Not. Because it's kind of... And I've heard
and
some other...
Part of that to me is how they treated her dance instructor, who came off to me like a buffoon instead of...
Yeah, I mean...
And he was intimidating his own way. He was a Mr. Miyagi that they instead
right.
turned into a SpongeBob SquarePants.
Right. I mean, it was, yeah. But, I mean, that's not why, for me,
no, but I mean, then you
it
know
was,
that she knows how to fight.
Right, and they haven't shown that this she has some skill. I mean, she's not going to kill a guy in a sword fight because she's better. But she knows how to do
it. Depending on the guy.
And, you know, it doesn't... they haven't driven it home the way I felt like... Reading the book, so it's like, this chick is badass.
Well, no, she's exactly... It's why I think she's a great match for Sandor in this stuff, and that she learns stuff from him, because she's like he is.
Right.
She's smart, quiet, and pragmatic.
Right, they're very much
alike. They do what needs to be done. As much as she wants to be her father's son, she's her mother's daughter.
Yeah, absolutely. She is the shrewdest of the Starks.
Yeah, I think she's very much Catelyn, as a child, but with more freedom.
Right.
As much as she wants to follow after her dad, she's following after her mom in how she lives her life. Anyway, all right, so that's this episode
of
Game of Thrones. There's one episode left in this third season.
Right.
Next week.
I think it's called Mysa. Mhysa. I have no idea what that means.
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah. So that's one more week to give us some compliments or some admonishments.
Rip us to shit.
Rip us and try to win a race, you know, and a free entry. This is $100 value that we're giving away here.
Yeah.
And to any
we're trying to.
Spartan.
Have we heard from
Reebok
Julia Letters
race.
Again? We haven't.
We have not.
No. She doesn't even want it, guys.
It's got to be somebody that we know.
It's free. It's free. Right now it's going to Poignant.
It's got to be somebody that we know. So,
or Schultz. Schultz is doing very well. Poignant just sent a text, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count. He's got to go to iTunes.
Got to go to iTunes. Honey, if you listen to these ever...
You could win a race.
You could win a race. We know you like to race.
You could win a race.
All right.
So...
Who are you and where are you from?
My name is Jimmy G. I'm not from anywhere. I'm living in Seattle, if that's what you're asking. You can find me.
That's what I'm asking.
On Twitter, at The Lazy Muse. Or you can go to Facebook, and that's www.facebook.com/The Lazy Muse.
And I'm Eric Gratton. You can find me at Totally Kidding on Twitter or at pinetarpress.com under the heading Obstructed Review, a twice weekly article about whatever the hell I want to write about.
That's right. And you can find Obstructed Review also on thelazymuse.com, where you can actually see all of our episodes as well or listen to all the episodes.
We have a playa.
And we have a playa. That's right, baby. We got a playa. And you can find the show notes with all the links to the different things we talk about, especially the beer. So you can find your own noble rot and see if you like it or not.
Oh, it's not very good.
It is. It's fruity. I didn't like it either. But, you know, I always judge a book by its cover. I literally started reading The Game of Thrones because I liked the cover.
No, understood. All right, so tune in for the next episode. We're about to record it right now. We're going to talk about the June 100 Challenge, movies we've never seen that we're dying to, and anything else that we feel like talking about.
That's right. Thank you for listening. We'll talk at you later.